one a killer.
No man that bad.
We are say that good man.
Good man, we are back with episode 4 of the People's Pod Show. I am your host, Keith McDonald, and in studio I have a good friend of mine. Introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, this is Aerosol James from The Dying Crew, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Hey, before we go any further, man, we got to give a shout out to The Dying Crew and the Piccolo and Shelby and Larson and everybody, man. What you're listening to in the background?
That would be Bat Boom off of Dine and Dash, our first kind of album we did together, me and all the boys.
So what's going on? What can we expect the next Dying Crew album?
We're chipping away at that right now. Just kind of working, focusing on the quality of the music and getting a little bit of movement upstairs in Shelby's and Larson's house with a studio, like an in-house kind of ranky-jank studio.
So you guys kind of separated like Voltron, and you're going to come back together in the near future?
Exactly, yeah. We want to focus on all of our own solo tapes and just kind of be working on that for a little bit. You guys listened to Tawa's Nephew. That was the solo project I released last year. And you can find that at erajames.bandcamp.com.
Right. So what have you been up to? I know you had an event or a group of events, a series of events that you just did. Tell the people about that.
Just a collection of all different kinds of music that I'm surrounded with in the Salt Lake City Valley and bringing everyone together, playing some music and seeing what could come out of that. It was a lot of fun.
And what'd you get? What was the result? How do you think putting together award shows in Salt Lake changed you or gave you the same perception of Utah rap music?
Just kind of learning to have respect for everyone else's talents, and everyone has a completely different mind state and way of thinking where their music's going to go, or if they just start rapping for fun, or if they're rapping to try to blow up or make money or anything like that. And everyone just has such an immense amount of talent that I figure, why not just bring us all together and showcase each other's talents, let each other know where we are currently and what is our next moves, where can we find all of each other's music, just to really try to support the whole scene as a unit, rather than just singularity and solo artists all around, just kind of doing their own thing, keeping their heads down.
And what were some of the obstacles that came with trying to bring all of these different artists together?
I would say organization, communication, trying to communicate with everybody was difficult. Shout outs Facebook, letting that be easier than it was before. And staffing too, feeling like being very low budget, me being a backpack rapper MC, not really having a whole bunch of money to toss around. Just getting everything lined up the way that I wanted it to be proved pretty difficult. But it still went off. People came, had a good turnout, a lot of good support and smiles and laughter. And that's what I want this music to be about for myself, is bringing joy and good feelings to people through the music and through the collective of people that are doing music in Salt Lake City.
Did you happen to run into an artist that you weren't too familiar with before, that you heard at the showcase that you were like, man, I kind of slept on that dude?
No, I pretty much was very comfortable with everybody and knew everybody that was coming. They all kind of surprised me though. They're all very, very talented. Got a lot of good lyrics, good beats. And it was inspiring for sure.
So before we came in the studio, we were having a little discussion on a comedian that got caught quote-unquote plagiarizing or borrowing or however you want to call it other people's material. And it's been a big thing in the rap industry recently with Drake supposedly having a ghostwriter and doing a lot of his material off of his latest album. What do you think about ghostwriters and MCs that have people, you know, writing verses or, you know, not, you know, because a ghostwriter is different than a collaborator. So if we're in a studio together and, you know, you happen to say, nah, Keith, you know, this line will work much better for you. And we're like, yeah, that's nice. That's nice right there. That's a different thing. But having somebody that you pay to write a song for you and kind of stay in the background as you take credit for it, that's different to me. To me, what do you think?
Totally different. Yeah, I mean, if you have that much money and that much stature as being a famous artist, I'm sure the creative flow can be halted sometimes. And I mean, people do that left and right, I'm sure. It's just whether or not if you get busted for it or if you get caught for it. But I think it's totally, totally wrong. You should be able to have your own creative flow and not have to pay someone else to do it or to have other people just try to have that creative ability for you. But if you're a superstar, I mean, who cares?
Yeah, but for me, it's like, that's what made rap more personal to me. Like, you know, when I assume, and when you're telling me, when you're speaking to me, that you're telling me stuff that's coming from your own head, you know? Mm-hmm. Singing is different. Like the talent in it is your voice, you know? In the hip hop game, my voice is talent. You know, Q-Tip has a very unique voice, you know, as a vocalist, but I take more stock in his words, his rhetoric, you know, his style, what he's saying to me. And I take it that he's talking to me personally. If you're not running through the six with your woes and somebody else wrote that, then who are you? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It made me want to learn about Quentin Miller, that whole Drake thing. Like, I want to know who Quentin Miller is now. Like, you know, it just seems to me that the game is so saturated that if you don't have your own thoughts, that you could just chill for a minute, you know?
I would hope so. Damn.
I mean, it is kind of crowded, man.
Yeah, sometimes you got to just chill on that. Like, I'd try to be a ghostwriter for someone or have someone ghostwrite for me. Got to keep that original flow going.
If Drake came to you with 30,000 right now, I think it would be hard to turn down. No, I'm sorry. You know, we all human. We are human. If Universal came with you with a check for 50,000 to write 3 songs or 5 songs for him, I don't know.
It'd be hard to turn it down, that's for sure.
You could do a lot of good with 50,000, man.
50,000, yeah, that's true. Very true.
Money compromises everything. So I got a little, I know you didn't come prepared for a test, but I have a test for you, man.
What is that?
We're going to do a ghostwriting test. I'm going to play some tracks for you, and you try to see if you can hear the person who wrote that track.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Ready.
I'm not ready. I gotta find the songs. Hold up. Alright, this is track 1, man. Now we all know this is Will Smith, right?
Great, tossing me a bunch of stuff that I'm probably not gonna know about,
but,
huh?
But Will Smith didn't write this though. Somebody else wrote this. Now listen to the verse and see if you could hear the famous rapper who wrote this for him. Legendary rapper wrote this. So we sip a little something, leave the rest to spill. Me and Charlie at the bar running up a high bill, nothing less than ill. Give me the blank.
I have no idea.
Nas wrote that.
Interesting.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like Nas at all. Nas and Will Smith, I wouldn't make that connection, but no doubt, man, Nas wrote that joint right there.
Yeah, maybe that's just kind of a unspoken thing in the music industry. Maybe a lot of people do it.
I got one more for you. Yeah, nigga. I'm still fucking with you. Stay safe, I'm Dre Day, nigga. AK, nigga. Though I've grown a lot, can't keep it home a lot. And doing this research, man, I found out that Dr. Dre doesn't write a damn thing.
Yeah.
Him and Puffy are like responsible for like 40% of the ghostwriters' revenue right now, man. Because Puffy don't write anything either, man. And when I listen to this song, I can hear who's rapping this, man. Still fuck with the beats. Still not loving police. Still rock my khakis with a cuff and a crease. Still got love for the streets, repping 213. Still the beats bang, still doing my thing. Since I left, ain't too much change. Still, I'm representing for the gangsters all across the world. Still.
So who wrote that?
That's Jay-Z, man.
Huh. Research.
Yeah, man. Research, man. Research.
Getting in that MacBook Pro, looking at all those different verses.
Yeah, I found that wasn't the most shocking. It wasn't the most shocking revelations that I uncovered when researching this. The most shocking was the Beastie Boys, man. I know Run from Run DMC helped them write Paul Revere, man. That's one of my favorite songs, man.
Would you consider that more of a co-collaborator sort of a thing?
It was an old school one, and the details on that are a little bit more iffy than mm-hmm. others. Like when you can go and look up somebody's publishing company and see that they've got these songs in their publishing company's like
right.
records, that's like more concrete evidence. So it's not a lot of evidence, but it is a well-known fact that Run helped them write Paul Revere. So I don't know, like as a writer, I couldn't, as just a journalist, I could never imagine having somebody write anything for me, man. That's ridiculous, you know. Yeah. I don't know how MCs feel, and you know, I feel like the rap game is a little bit more towards profit than product. You know, people don't really care what they put out there as long as it gets them, you know, yields them a return. So I don't know. I mean, if that's where we're at right now, you know, it's where we're at right now. But
seems kind of like that way, right?
You know,
about the return, about the feedback, about who's coming, who's not gonna come out, you know.
I think a lot of it has to do with the marketing behind it, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of artists, I think they get the benefit from having Universal put that single in your ear like 20 times a day without you even knowing it, you know?
Yeah.
It's a new song by Flo Rida, that Welcome to My House song. And before I even heard it on the radio, I think I heard it in like 3 commercials, man. Like, and it wasn't even a month old, and it was everywhere, man. I think if people put Cool Calm Collected everywhere like that, man, it would be the same results, man. You know, I think it's not an even playing field, so it's kind of hard for the underground artists to even get recognize.
Exactly.
Because whenever people say that you know, hip hop is dead or the art form is dying, and I list like 5 rappers I think that are, you know, quote unquote mainstream, you know, and are dope, and people don't buy their albums. Like, you say hip hop is dead, but you don't have a Locksmith album, you don't have a Apollo Brown album, you don't have a, you know, like a lot of underground heads are kind of, you know, using the same platforms as a Kanye and as a Jay-Z and as a Drake, but they kind of don't get that same push in the marketplace, I guess. How are you gonna compensate for that? Like, what are you planning? What's your scheme to kind of put your product in more people's hands and give them the chance to see what you're about?
I guess I got to get more social media exposure. Different, what are those, like apps and stuff, website links, and you know, if I say something, just I mean, continuously push it out. But that's such a separated thing, I feel like, at least for me, because when you're in the music making process, that's way heavier and just takes more time and energy than when it's time to push the music out on those said outlets. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Reverb Nation, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, stuff like that, that it's the energy for me, at least, is lost, where I just want to continue making more music. So maybe having a team or someone that doesn't make music and doesn't need to worry about the music making process, and then they can just kind of help push out the word like you said, 20 times a day. I mean, that would be a good goal. Radio play, podcasts, friends, family, just everybody kind of trying to be on the same page of we're trying to push out music so people can listen to it and get joy and happiness and positivity from it.
So Dying Crew aside, who are some of your favorite artists here in Utah?
Malev the Shinobi, Dumb Luck, Alive and Well Family, Sig Burna, Swell Merchants, Dusk Raps. There's a bunch of them, man.
Yeah, I've been trying to like talk to people out here about how getting a hip hop night that was a little bit more, I don't want to say well respected, because I know people are doing stuff that's really respectable, but kind of more universal for everybody to take, you know, to take in, you know, a night where people don't punch their microphones on accident. a night where people could come together and say, look, this is the night we're going to go and, you know, kick it in a way that's conducive to hip hop heads. How do you think we could, I don't know what you call it, like, make promoters or make club owners less scared? I don't know what to do. Why do you think it's not a hip hop night out here, a prominent one?
It's a really good question. And there's people that continue to try to do that. And that's the only thing that at the end of the day or at the end of the month that really counts is if you just keep doing it. Keep doing hip hop shows. Keep finding that venue that's going to love it. You know, show one, have a couple fans, and then the next show will have more, and hopefully they just keep coming out, and then it grows and builds off of that effort.
I think the show aspect is there, man. I mean, I go to plenty of great shows. I'm talking about kicking it, like, you know what I'm saying? The new hotness is out. I'm finna go and I'm finna kick it. I'm gonna hear some good music. I'm gonna dance a little bit. I'm gonna see and socialize with other people that enjoy the same type of music I do. And I think it's sorely lacking for hip hop and for reggae in this state.
Yeah.
And, I think the whole Willie's thing kind of accentuated that to where it's kind of a chasm between hip hop party goers and club owners and promoters.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they just are seeing the drug culture and anything seen as negativity or gang culture, things like that, that are deeply rooted with hip hop.
It's got to be the gang. It's got to be something about gangs, because I know alternative music in Utah society in general has a affliction when it comes to pills and meth and other drugs. So it's not just hip hop that's into drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's got to be the gang. It's got to be gangs. It's got to be like, I don't know, because I've been to places that enforce a dress code out here, but they play the music of people who don't dress that dress code. You know what I'm saying? You kind of get me? Like, you'll play street artists like Young Jeezy and Rick Ross and all of these guys, but you won't let people in that look like that. And that's confusing to me.
That is confusing, for sure. I don't get it either, man. It's just a very strange mystery that I feel like goes a long way and all around the world, probably not just in Utah, but just where you are and what you see, having a lot to deal with is with what's to come. What sells, you know, what's going to bring people in to your club or sell the most drinks holds more weight than what are you saying in your music and how is it affecting a younger generation?
So whenever I tell people about how I met Aerosol James, I talk about the performance you guys did for, it was an A-Hat rap battle, and you and Dying Crew performed, and you had an all-white outfit on with some Coke bottle glasses, man. I will never forget that night. It was crazy. It was one of my first times at an underground show in Salt Lake City, so I was kind of just getting on the radio and just starting to write about music and stuff. So it just, I don't know, it kind of was my introduction to Utah rap artists. And I had fun. I think that summer the project was really popping, and they had Blueprint and a whole bunch of battles and everything. And, you know, the Pioneer Park shows were going on and everything like that. It takes a lot to come from a different culture and to come to Utah and kind of leave your misconceptions or preconceived notions behind, mm-hmm. and not judge somebody off of where they're from. Okay, I'm from Chicago, but these Utah cats are weirdos. Nah, you know what I'm saying? I had to kind of like, they're from a different place than me. Let me kind of listen to them and see what they're about and try to, you know, find something about what they're saying that I could identify with. What do you think some of the misconceptions about Utah rappers are that you've encountered while you've been doing your thing?
Trying to stay away from all those preconceived notions, because I know they're out there, and it sucks to have to deal with them a lot. People from out of town instantly think it's just not happening out here. People have no skill. People don't sharpen their craft. Religion, of course, the whole Christian, Mormon stipulation. Not everyone's Mormon, you know, not everyone's religious.
How many times
do lower you quality of music, I guess. People think that if you're from Utah or Salt Lake, that there isn't the certain outlets or studios or people out here that have pull and recognition to make good music.
Fair enough, man. So how many times do you get compared to like Logic or Eminem or another white rapper just because you happen to be white and you rap? Is that something that happens?
Because that's just all that the people that when they make that comparison, they just only know, like how you were talking about the music that is on the radios and pushed out, that's what they're hearing. Because I don't feel like a lot of people do computer research and listen to older generations of hip hop and kind of let that soak in and resonate with them. That, yeah, if that's what they're listening to and if that's what they think I sound like, that's fine with me. I mean, those are all very talented MCs, so any sort of leveling or comparison to someone that's lyrically talented, I'm cool with that. I respect that.
I just don't get it, man. I feel like there's so much like homerism and division in hip hop that people can't take constructive criticism, man. Mm-hmm. And know that just because somebody doesn't like your music, it doesn't mean that your music is bad. It just means that person doesn't have the particular ear to hear your music. Even at that time, they might never hear it, or they might hear it 3 months from now and be like, you know what? I didn't get that dude at first, but now that it's on and I'm looking at things in this light, you know, right now, I kind of like it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had to sit on albums a lot. You know, I've had to sit on albums, especially when I'm reviewing local stuff and I'm trying to find something good about an album that has maybe poorer production quality because it's not coming out of a million-dollar studio, you know, mm-hmm. like the Compton album I review. But, you know, you have to kind of look around some things and kind of say, well, you know, this person is working off a wage budget, you know what I mean? Like, this person actually works a 9-to-5 and then does music because they like it, and you got to kind of give them a little pass on certain things, you know? Mm-hmm. It's not going to, everything's not going to be clean as it would if it came out of, you know, I don't know any top-notch
studios. Yeah. No, I understand what you're saying, though, that those kind of things might not be here. Those kind of really immaculate big studios, but hey, if they are, let me know where they're at. Try to talk to someone. Let me do a song in there.
So I just got that Dumb Luck just came out.
Not official yet.
Yeah. Well, the album release just happened at Urban Lounge on Thursday.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Then Concise Kilgore just came out with something maybe last weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Then we got, I want to say somebody else. I'm forgetting. I'm drawing a blank. It's been a lot of good stuff coming out, you know, leading up into the summer. Do you have anybody that, you know, you kind of looking forward to hearing their projects?
Well, mine, of course, working on another one.
And what's the name for it? What do you have a name yet?
It was going to be called Into the Muh, but now I've kind of had a creative shift and I want to switch it up a little bit. So I'm still kind of thinking on what I'm going to call it, what it's going to look like, its packaging and stuff like that. But all the music and stuff is ready to go. So,
hey, the homie Beardo came over my house the other day and he was bumping some tracks off of Into the Muh, man.
No way.
Yeah, one of the homeboys, man. I think it was on Into the Muh. But I know it was some Aerosol James, man. And I came into the car. I mean, I hopped in his car for a second and I was like, hold up. So you've been getting around, man. You've been getting around. The merch and the work, the albums, and I'm sure people have been noticing the work you put into the showcases and all the shows that you've been putting on, man. So I definitely want to get you in and tell you how much I appreciate all the hard work you've been doing, man.
Thank you.
We went up to Park City TV a couple months ago. That was your first time on live TV. Kind of tell me how that experience was.
It was so amazing. From being just not getting any word out, not being in front of cameras or in front of microphones or other people, just kind of hanging out with the boys and the friends and just doing music when we could, playing shows, to going and having that large of an opportunity was amazing. All the cameras, all the nice studio giving you waters and giving you food and giving you a chance to show your music, not only the audio of the music, but also the visuals of it, was really cool.
All right, so I got another test for you, man.
No.
You failed the first one, man. You failed the first one, man. But I think this one, I think you're going to do well on this one, okay?
Okay.
So I'm always criticized, man. I get criticized a lot, man, about what I write and about my views on music and stuff. And one of them that I really catch flack for, a lot of flack for, is saying that I'm not an Eminem fan, man. I'm a mama's boy, dude. I mean, what can I say? I'm not really a big fan of Eminem. So after I say that, I get called all type of names, man. I'm a racist, or I'm biased, or, you know, I'm from Chicago, so you can't feel the Detroit rappers, and just anything you would like to hear, like or not like to hear about yourself, I get told that. So what I do is I list a group of MCs that I like that happen to be white, and I try to see if the person could tell me who those MCs are, man. So I want to test you on your knowledge of current MCs that are not Eminem.
Don't do this to me, man. Don't do this to me, man. People that don't know me, I'm a little different. I don't do a lot of looking into people. I don't like to pay a lot attention to what people are doing. And because I have this thing that I have an idea where the mind is like a sponge. So when you listen to other people's stuff, and I'm a visual artist too. So if you look at other people's art, that immediately influences you and directly kind of inspire, quote unquote.
That's what Amy Schumer said about stealing jokes. Supposedly stealing jokes. She said there's some congruencies because I listen to those people, and then it might come out in what I say. And my cousin tells me that. My cousin Black, shout out to Black, does music and he doesn't listen to anybody else's stuff. So I can feel it. I can feel it, man.
So maybe I'm not too different because other people do it as well. But you know what I mean. You listen to other people's things and it finds its way into your consciousness. So all the tapes and musics that I've done so far, it's been just straight from me, from what I see, what I do, my surroundings, and metaphors and painting pictures with words rather than getting inspired from other artists and trying to make like-minded music.
So what's your creative process like? Do you pre-write? Do you have to write to the beat? Do you write and just, you know, throw stuff in a notebook and use it again sometime? What are you doing?
A mix of all of those. Notebooks, a little bit of notebook writing. I like to do voice memos because with the live performance you try to get your breaths placed correctly so that you could not only record it well in a breath, but you could also be jumping around and dancing and rapping and have that breath control. So I recorded a lot of voice memos and just listened to them over and over and over again, and that's how my words get kind of imprinted into my mind.
Do you have anything coming up this summer? I know you guys went to Vegas recently.
Mm-hmm.
How was that? I heard there was a little bit of commotion around that Vegas trip.
What did you hear?
I just heard you guys went to Vegas and it was you guys went to Vegas and it was an adventure.
Yeah, that was an adventure for sure. A lot of gambling, a lot of drinking, two shows in a night, stayed out there for a weekend. And yeah, then just came back to Salt Lake. Want to do that again soon. It was a lot of fun.
Plans to go back to Vegas or go somewhere else? What's going on?
Yeah, Vegas. Might as well. Know some people out in California. Maybe just stop there and dabble around.
Do you think that helps, or is it like more of a financial burden, or how does it work out for you financially? Is it something that's just like, hey, it's what you gotta do, you know, to get your material out there, or is it more of the kind of mystery machine type thing? Like, we're going out there, we don't know what's gonna happen.
With the last one, it was like we wanted to go out there to hang out with our friends. So it was more like killing two birds with one stone. We could do a show, and we could also hang out and have a vacation and have a good time. I think that's how it's going to be for a little bit longer until we get more headway and pull. And then, yeah, then the money wouldn't really matter. You save up enough money for gas and food and just drive out there and just do it just for fun.
Nice. So tell the people one more time where they can find you and your music and just anything about Aerosol James and Dying Crew.
Well, Google's a good one. Just Google DineKrew. Google Aerosol James, EraSoleJames. If you want to download all the free music or pitch a donation, we have a Bandcamp. You could do erajames.bandcamp.com. And yeah, pretty much those will be all the links that you could find. YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Dine Crew with a K. It's not too hard. You'll pretty much stumble across where the links are, because the name is very original. So it just comes up like, it's one of the first ones that come up out there.
Now that you said that, man, you got to tell the people how you guys came up with the name.
How the name came up. That was it's kind of still a mystery. People have different ideas of what it is, but it's Dine is Navajo for people, and Shelby is Pima, so he's Native American. And the crew was a C, switched it from a C to a K just to have it stand out, pop out more originally.
Not any affiliation type thing. It was a style thing.
It was a style thing.
Got you. Well, man, it's a pleasure as always, man, to have you come in all the way from, you know, KU Radio days until now. You know, I'm a fan. I'm gonna always keep up with you and what you're doing and silently root for you from the bar, you know, as I'm eating my street tacos like last time. And
that's love, man.
That's love, man. That's what's up. Thank you all for listening to this, the fourth episode of the People's Pod Show. Once again, I'm your host, Keith McDonald. There are 5 million, over 5 million podcasts in the world right now. You chose to listen to this one, and for that, I thank you. So with that, listen to the sweet sounds of Exhibit C and J Electronica as we get ghosts.